Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
76. And I can't believe we did this many episodes, but I wanted to bring in a good friend and colleague, Jason Neal. He just put out a book called, Jason?
Accidentally Aligned.
Yes, right. Sir. Accidentally Aligned. And that's kind of an interesting title. And Jason asked me to write the foreword to the book, and I happily agreed because I really liked what he had to say. But, you know, when you look at that title, it's a very humble title. I think, you know, it's not like beating your chest that you had all the answers and that you were God's gift to Lean. And I think this book is more about leadership than it is about Lean. But I think you basically use Lean as the playground, if you will, to talk about the behaviors and the things that have to happen to be successful in that regard. So Jason and I have known each other for a couple of years now. And he's an operations leader. Am I allowed to say where you work?
Sure, that's fine, yes.
Okay, GE Aircraft Engines, run by Larry Culp, who I know very well, and I worked with at Danaher for over a decade. He's worked for a number of Fortune 500 companies and extensive experience working with conflict resolution. I can't believe you had conflict resolution, Jason. and building self-directed work teams by applying servant leadership principles, and we'll talk more about that. You have a mechanical engineering degree from Miami University, as well as an MBA from Indiana Wesleyan University, and you reside in Cincinnati. That's in Ohio, for those of you who don't know. And you have a wife and two children, and yes. They're both in college, right?
They are, yes.
So I'm surprised you're not gray yet. I'm surprised.
Oh, I am. It's here. I cover it as well
okay,
as I can.
It's coming up.
Yeah.
Once you get past the college expenses and all that, right?
Yeah.
I went through that myself. But Jason, let's just start with Accidentally Aligned. I mean, it's a great book. And when he asked me to write the foreword to it and I read the manuscript, it's something that's not really talked about a lot. Or it is, but it isn't. Because what I liked about your book and your style is that you're not doing this from a very academic perspective. There's a lot of academics out there that talk about this stuff, but they never had the experiences that you had. And that's what I really liked about it. I also like the fact that you're very humble about you're not afraid to say, hey, I made a mistake, right?
But
why did you write the book?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I started doing, I wouldn't even, I agree with you. I don't think it's a lean book. I think it's a leadership book. Mm-hmm. And we had real problems. And I was trying to lead some large teams, and they were a little dysfunctional. We made it as fun as we could, but it was all in there, right? And we were trying to get somewhere, and we didn't know how. And I hit a lot of walls. I got a lot of scar tissue from things I just did wrong. I didn't know what to do. And I remember those times when I would just sit and I would feel completely alone and had the weight of all this, you know, and people expected you to do things, didn't know if I was even capable of doing them, doing the very best that I could and working with people and failing. And I remember those times that leaders would just tap me on the shoulder and they would pull me in a side room and say, and I remember there was one individual leader that did this. And he stopped me one day and he pulled me into this room and said, sit down. I want to talk to you for a second. And I said, sure. And I thought I was in trouble, you know, again, because I was having a lot of this conversation at the time. And he took a little napkin out, and I wish I had kept the napkin. It didn't mean much to me at the time. I threw it away, and now it would be like a monument, a pivotal point in my life, you know. But he said, I'm going to help you because I like you. And I'm tired of seeing you get destroyed every day. And I'm like, okay, you have my ear. And he wrote on this napkin two words, continuous improvement. And it was really the first time I had ever had an exposure with the idea of continuous improvement. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, that was your first start right there, the question. So we're going to do this a lot. I want you to ask a lot of questions. I'm going to try to help you. and he wasn't an expert in it by any means. I wouldn't even consider him to be a sensei, but he knew enough to know you're getting chewed up. And the reason I wrote the book, all that to bring that around, is there aren't enough people like that that I'm finding right now. I see you're one of them. Like you grab people and you're like, hey, let me help you. Let me push you forward. I try to be one of them. But I thought if there was something that people could put their hands on and say, read it and say, I'm not alone. You know, there we might not have all the answers. We might be feeling a lot of pain right now, but I am not alone. There is a way forward and we can get there. That's the reason I wrote it.
Now, tell me about the title. The title is a very interesting title.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were doing a transformation at a very large facility, and it was kind of, I would say it was a mix between green and brown. They had some machines there and they weren't doing very well with them. And there's a lot of empty space. And we went there and we were trying to fix the stuff that was wrong so that we could build the stuff the right way, you know, off of it. And I'm working with these production employees every day. They're just the best people I've ever worked with in you know, southern US. They were just wonderful. And we're challenging them and they're asking questions and they're trying our ideas. And all of a sudden, it was one day, the delinquency went away. It was like 3,000 pieces and then it just wasn't there anymore. And we called the customer and it used to be a really bad exchange and it was just very, very toxic and they were frustrated and all of a sudden they weren't. And they came through and they're like, wait, the customer said, the ideas that you're doing here, we're doing at our plant. And one of the production associates said, that's so weird. And I said, what? And they said, it's like we were accidentally aligned. And I laughed and I was like, there's no accident. But it's funny because I do think so many times in my life, when I look back, my whole life has been an accidental alignment. It's like I just got lucky, or I was in the right place, or I ran into the right person, and they decided to help me for reasons I can't explain. And so I pinned that on it, and I thought, it's got to be that, you know.
By the way, just to clarify, the 3,000 delinquency was past due.
It was past due. Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. 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 Interesting how, well, you know, let me ask you this question. I mean, when I look at my career too, and when I first got the job offer from George Koenigsaker and Art Byrne, I refused it. I said no. And, you know, George came back after me, okay? And I won't tell you why I refused it. It was nothing to do with George. It's just the way the structure was set up and who I was going to report to. But, anyway, I sometimes wonder what would happen if he never came back and just went on to the next candidate, and where would I be now? I don't know. But in some sense, I sort of think, and I got to ask you, do you think that this is all ordained anyway? And like, yeah, you know, because there's a amount of luck involved in being at the right place and all that. But is being at the right place sort of beyond our control? And
I agree.
And, you know what I'm saying?
I do agree with you. And I think that's spot on. And I'll tell you, I also turned down when I was offered the role by my sensei, and we were sitting together in Alabama, and he said, I would like you to take the global leader role for this position and start to deploy this. And I didn't even think a second about it, Mark. I said, no, I have no desire to do that. And I kind of just laughed, but he didn't laugh at all. And he said, but that's why it's got to be you, because everybody else is begging for it. And he's in. And I do think you're right. I think it's like the way we live our life and the way our beliefs are and what guides us and the moral principles and all the things. And there's a table that's prepared for that moment. And I don't think it was an accident by any means. I think it was absolutely, that was the time. It's time for this to happen. And it did. I agree with you.
Well, you know, I think not to get too religious about this, but I do think there's a plan. And
I do too, Mark. Yes.
And I think also God puts you in situations that are tough sometimes. And I think sometimes he's doing it to teach us how to be more resilient, how to be more. And that's what your book, I mean, you know, when you go through your book, it's all about resilience. You had a heck of a lot of resilience in there. And, you know, I do want to talk to you about a story called Scratch Heard Around the World. But before I do that, See, a lot of things that you talk about in this book so blend together into one big Venn diagram. So it's almost hard to pick one thing to say, you know, let's just talk about respect for people, or let's just talk about being authentic, or, you know, that kind of thing. It all kind of gets into like your character in terms of, you know, what you're all about and all that. So, but let me pick it apart and talk about
sounds good
about respect for people. And you talk a lot about that in there. And one of the things I saw what you wrote was employees tolerate bad processes. And you didn't say this, but, you know, I'll say it. In my experience, leaders still expect perfect performance, but they're in charge of creating the framework around continuous improvement, make sure those processes are foolproof and all that. But anyway, talk to me about that.
Yeah. So that's a great point to land on. So my experience, and I don't speak on behalf of GE Aircraft Engines. I've worked for, you know, Delphi, Procter & Gamble, GE. So there's some different experiences. So I want to make sure that none of this reflects their values. These are my ideas I'm sharing today. But I will tell you, in this scope of these organizations that I've been in, I do find that most people, and I don't know what percentage it is, they're trying to do their very best. Most of them have families, they had dreams, they were little kids, they might not have even wanted to do this job, they might have wanted to be an astronaut, I don't know. But they grew up and they ended up in these places, and they want to be the hero to their family. They want to be a respected person in their community, and they're stuck into these bad processes. And we as leaders have a choice. We can do one of two things. We can say, let's squeeze them harder, which is going to do what? It's going to cause them problems at home. It's going to cause them problems in their community. It's going to cause them fear over losing their job and not being able to provide for their family or not be able to be who they need to be in society. Or we can say, what about this process is causing them to have these issues? And how can I use my authority and in my position to break that for them and help them? And I see both. I see the second one less, and where those people are, I know who they are. And I think all of us do. We go through life and we meet those people and we're like, they're different. They're special. And it shouldn't be special. That should be the, you know, the standard. Like, if our people are struggling and they're hurting, how can we use our position not to squeeze them and crush them, but to help them figure out what about that is broken? Where are the gaps and how can we fill that to create a nice sustainable system for you to come in and be a part of every day? And that's,
You mean to tell me that you're using root cause problem solving?
We try.
To find out why there are psychological safety issues?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, I thought it was only meant for engineers and products. Well, you're an engineer, but.
Right, yes.
I mean, what I've is heard the that. Root cause?
Yes.
What is the root cause of the psychological safety is really what you're talking about.
That's it.
You know, and that kind of leads me right into the scratch heard around the world. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a part of the book later in the book, which I thought was a really neat story. But it goes around the notion of safety, quality, delivery, cost hierarchy. That's not a list. Each one higher up is more important than the next one down. Of course, starting with safety. And the story that, once you tell us about the whole scratch heard around the world story, because I thought this to me, I guess when I read it, said, you're authentic in terms of holding true to the principles, regardless of the ramifications. But go ahead.
So that's a great story. I still feel pain from that when I tell the story. It's not far from me, but I'll tell you, we had this issue, and I had this mechanic that came to me, and he said, "Hey, we have this scratch that I'm seeing," and I never saw scratches there before, and I'm raising the flag, and now I had, this is where we have the decision. I can say, well, what do you want to do? Do you want me to keep pushing, or do you want me to ignore this, or should we take a look at this? And I know, because I'm responsible for delivery, if I look at this, I'm going to probably find something, because this guy's been here like 30 years and he knows his job. And if he's seeing something different, he's probably right. And some would tell you this is a flaw about me, because I do listen to that. And I have my own opinions about that, but I listened to the gentleman and I said, let's take a look at it. And And so I asked him, I said, you always use, you know, a magnification to see this? And he said, no. And I said, well, take the magnifiers off and tell me if you can still see it. Yeah, I still see it. And I said, I see it too, right? Mm. And we looked at the print. The print says no visual indication. So we have a problem. Something's wrong. And so I made the call and I said, stop the line. And when I say stop the line, I'm talking, we stopped everything from we were final assembly, we were shipping to final customer. We shut down the entire supply chain all the way back through the suppliers. Wow. And so I began trying to do a root cause investigation. We were checking shipping containers. We were looking for debris. We were checking rags that were used for cleaning things and checking them for metal fiber. We had the labs running overnight and we could not figure out what was going on. And so nothing had changed process wise. We checked it, talked to the people. They're like, no, I mean, it's what I've always done. They're just, I see them too, but we don't know where it's coming from. And I got a call from very, very high up and they said, we need to have a conversation. I need you to come to my office. And I said, okay. And then before I hung up, they said, and when you leave my office, you're not going to be the same. And I thought, wow. So, you know, it's coming. It's coming. And it's these times in life, just like you said, and I do think that's where God builds us for things. I didn't know why I was going through that, but there was something that was being built in my life that I didn't have. And it was needed for where I was going. And I went to that office and got there and he was right. I wasn't the same when I left. He got me, you know, and I left, came back to the line and the folks knew what had happened. All my team knew what had happened. And they said, so are we turning it back on? And I said, no, we're not turning it back on. And they said, you might lose your job. And I said, it's very important that we hold this line because we're creating a standard. Whatever precedents we create today is going to be the standard going forward. And if we create the wrong one, they're going to know it. We can break it. So I held and we kept doing the inspections. We kept doing the things we knew. We could not find root cause. And then I get this phone call. And this was one of my mistakes. And again, it was this building process. All of these failures were building something in me. This supplier, I was so busy. I never talked to him. I never called him, never checked on him. They just were very reliable and I knew they were there. So I didn't fool with them. And the owner of this company calls and he says, hey, how do you like that new mirror finish that we're giving you on that part? And I was like,
oh boy,
come again. Oh boy. And yeah, right. And I said, what is that? And he said, yeah, well, you're such a good, you know, customer. We decided we can do that better. We can give you a mirror finish. And I'm pulling the prints while I'm talking. And I said, we don't have a mirror finish requirement on that. And he's like, well, I know, but we're trying to do a good thing. And that's where a lot of issues, it's always, most of the time is from a good place, you know? And I said, I need you to back that up to what the print says. And I know you can do it better, but I need you to do what we asked you to do and not more, just that. And all of them went away immediately. And I learned a lot of lessons that day. I learned one, you stay close to people and your high performers, a lot of times we tend to get away from. We say, they're fine. We don't need to connect. I probably need to connect more with them. And two, over-processing. That was really the first time I had an experience with over-processing.
Yeah, there you
because
go.
It made sense. We want to do a better job and we're trying to do our very best. And it was just such a good place, but it was that lesson. So I walked away with a lot of good lessons that day.
Well, you know, by the way, I had a very similar experience with when I was running the Asian business for Jake Brake at Danaher. Our vendor decided to tumble a spring that we normally didn't. When I say it's a spring, it was a flat spring. And because that's what the print said.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, my God, we weren't tumbling it. But it was and an operator caught it on the line at Mitsubishi in Japan. And the quality, I said, remember Mr. Ko, the quality guy lost face.
Yeah.
And I had to fly all the way to Japan to do a mea culpa with a A3 countermeasure and explain the whole thing. And one day, I was there for one day.
Yeah.
And I flew back. Okay. And you got to do that when you deal with the Japanese. But anyway, I commend you, though, because so many leaders will say, hey, yeah, safety, quality, delivery, cost. We really believe that hierarchy as they're putting the posters together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
But when push comes to shove and they're going to short a customer on delivery, which is below Q, below quality, they might say, no, just ship it, right?
Yeah.
Because that's how they get compensated.
Yes.
My guess is leaders don't get all that highly compensated on safety and probably not even on quality.
No.
But it's on cost. It's on cost.
Yeah.
which is a byproduct of all the stuff above it, right? And so I really think you walk the talk there. And how many people would really do that and risk their job to say, no, I'm going to do the right thing, right? So, I mean, that's an awesome story. It really is.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, no, I really do like that. And this whole thing about employees have to tolerate bad processes. You know, the other thing I want to point out is, was that shop that you talked about with the scratches, was that a union shop?
It was, yes.
And you had the union guy come to you and say, hey, I mean, you must have had a great relationship with them because, you know, a lot of people think unions are bad and, you know, I would rather not have a union. Don't get me wrong.
Right, right.
unions are bad and it's always adversarial. And it wasn't at Jake. It was adversarial to some degree, but we had a UAW shop at Jake Brake.
Yeah.
You know, I wrote a couple of the contracts and all that, or negotiated a couple. But they're people. These are people.
They are.
You know,
they are.
When I saw an operator that worked for me, I saw my father. My father was a tool and die guy for 44 years. He was
same.
In the union. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And they're people. They're not. You treat them like people. But the fact that this guy came to you, he easily could have looked the other way. No.
He could have. And in the past, I think he would have. And I'll tell you what you just said there, Mark. Very few people understand what you just said. When I have these conversations, one of my mentors told me, they said, if you want to be good at business, you just need to understand people, because you can learn the skills, but the people, they're all the same. And it doesn't matter what badge they wear or what office they sit in. They have the same problems. They have the same fears. They're trying to protect themselves. And with these folks, when we created that atmosphere of safety, And I always tried to lead with that precedence. And hopefully if you ask them to this day, that's how they remember it. But I would tell them, there's nothing that you're going to tell me that if you come and tell me, you're going to get in trouble for. Now, if I catch something and you're hiding it from me, we're going to have a different conversation. But if you will come and tell me, you're safe. And I'll tell you, man, they told me some stuff. I learned everything once we started that. And some of the stuff I was like, wow, yikes. But that's how you get there. And once I knew it, I was like, well, it's kind of on me to fix it. Now, if it's going to be fixed, it's not there. They don't have the ability to fix that. They came to me because they think I do and they trusted me. And now if I'm who I say I am and who I should be, I probably should go try to fix that.
Well, you know, you established a level of trust with them.
Yeah.
You know, and trust to me is what it's all about. And when I see, by the way, just to deviate a little bit here, but when I see lean offices, corporate lean offices, sitting there waiting for the phone to ring asking them to help them, it's because they're not being trusted. And then they go in with an audit, and now they turn it to traffic cops, which you and I have talked before.
Yes.
I'm just against lean audits.
Yeah.
And also, usually those audits are just based on tools, but not how all that goes together, and never around the stuff you're talking about.
That's right. Never.
Did you fill the standard work chart out the correct way? You know, that type of thing.
Yes.
I'm not trying to down that. I mean, that's important stuff to know. But that to me just does not build trust when you come in,
no. And
especially when these lean officers say, "Oh, yeah, the operations are our customer." Well, when have you ever seen a supplier audit his customer?
Right. Never.
So you don't build the trust, and then all of a sudden you figure, oh, this is not working, and then it becomes finger pointing, right? And I really admire you for how you handle that. And it takes a lot of courage too, by the way.
I was afraid, Mark. I will tell you, I wasn't sure.
I bet you were.
I felt it, man.
Well, as they started telling you all this stuff from the union, I mean, you're not in a witness protection program, are you?
No. No, not even close.
but you said something. I mentioned this a little earlier in the podcast here. I love this, and I want to explore this with you and get more thoughts about it. There's a line in your book where you say, company culture is what the most powerful people in the organization are willing to tolerate.
Yes,
I never heard culture described that way.
I hadn't either. I'll tell you, when I would teach these courses to my people and we would try to help them and we would do Gemba visits, and I would not have described it that way 10 years ago. I really wouldn't have. I thought it was something very different. But this is what I found. When I would go into these rooms and I would go into these assembly plants and people would say, this is wrong, or that is wrong, or I reported this and nothing was done. It just began to reveal itself to my mind. And I started thinking, I was like, but who was responsible for that? Who said we're okay with not addressing that? Or who said we're okay with not listening? Or when a leader yelled at an employee and berated them in public and nobody said anything, like, whose fault is that? Is it the leader's fault? Maybe, right? There's some fault there. But there's also this, like, why didn't the group say anything? You had all that power. There were 100 of you. If you had just spoke up and said, we're not going to accept that interaction, that is disrespectful. That is culture right there. That voice, that strong voice of the most power. And it's, when I say the most powerful people, it's not always leadership. When I was working with the union and there was 300 of them, I would venture to say they were the most powerful because there were numbers that were higher. Sure. And it shifts back and forth, but it's as a group, as a overall group, what are we willing to tolerate? Am I willing to tolerate people being disrespected? Am I willing to tolerate my people being afraid of me? Am I willing to tolerate all these things, or do I have a voice? And am I willing to do things that I'm afraid of, to say, this is just not acceptable. This is not the world we want to live in. This is not the organization we want to create. It's really, really hard. It's so hard.
Well, you know, I've met, and I know you have too, leaders, and you're not Danaher, right? There were some leaders there that just loved when people were so intimidated by them.
Yes, I've seen that.
They loved that. It was a power trip for them. And,
yeah.
And, you know, that type of thing. Or the leaders that say, hey, we're going to have a team meeting at 7 p.m. on Friday night. You
yep.
know, that
yeah.
that kind of thing, you know.
I've seen that.
So, you know, I look at that, and then you ask yourself, well, how did they get to be leaders? Probably because of something technically they did, you know, some technical brilliance that they have, but they don't know really how to deal exactly what you talked about earlier is people, right?
That's well said.
And what that all means. And by the way, I'm not sitting here saying I'm a God's gift to leadership.
None of us are.
I piss people off, Mike Lyons
yep.
too.
I do too.
And but I'm very direct. I'm behind all this though, is I really want to help them.
That's you know? It. That's and, it. It's and, where your heart's coming from.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you know, we all have probably improvements to make in that regard. But you know, and I think what you're saying about company culture here is not only what the behaviors are, but it's the ones that don't show up.
That's it. It's right? the missing
it's ones. Omission, yeah. right?
Yeah.
You know, And you look at what that looks like, and there's so many things that are written out there on culture, and you know, I think you hit it right here. Basically, it's just, you know, it's how do you behave?
Yeah.
How do you behave? You know.
Yeah.
And you know, I go back to the writing the posters. You can write all you want on the wall with a poster that says safety is the most important.
Is
but
it?
Then tolerate a safety issue because you got to get that shipment.
That's
out.
Right.
Okay.
That's
I've
right.
seen that too. I've seen that too.
Yeah.
And it's like, are we really walking the talk in that regard?
That's well know? Said.
What do you hope for your book, Jason? What do you hope? I mean, I know yeah. you and I have talked before. I know you said, hey, look, I'm not writing this to make a lot of money on the book. Yeah. You can probably lose money on it. Okay.
So but, far, yes.
I mean, I haven't made any money on my book. I made money on it, but I'm still in the deficit position.
Yeah.
But, and I know that's not why you wrote it.
Okay? Yeah.
And I know you didn't write it because of your ego.
No, that's not it.
What's your hope for the book?
Yeah.
What are you hoping happens here?
Yeah. So I will tell you, and you're spot on with your assessment. There are actually things in the book that I write that a lot of leaders see as primitive. When I talk to a lot of leaders and I say, hey, respect for people is an important thing, you know, honesty and integrity, these are important ideas. The feedback I get is you're very elementary. You do not understand how to run a business. You just don't understand. You wouldn't even be bringing these ideas. There's a lot more complicated things that we could be working on, and you're trying to bring us back to kindergarten. So I don't expect anything like anyone to wake up and say, wow, that's you know, the light came on. This is really, really ahead of the curve. The reason I wrote it is because it's really important. And I'll tell you, I have to ask, I've got two kids, right? And I have to live in the world that we create. And I'd like to think at some point that my voice mattered in this world. And I'm just one person, and we're all just one person. But if we, like I said, culture is whatever the strongest people in the room are willing to tolerate. And if we don't have a voice to say, yeah, I'm a voice in this world, and there's work we can do there, and people are hurting because of it, we're leaving a lot on the table. There's people that are suffering. They're having a lot of issues because we're just not taking the time to even listen. And that's what I want. And I want people, you know, Simon Cowell from America's Got Talent or whatever show he does. I don't even remember what the name of the show is. But he said this, and I heard it in a passing interview and on television. And it hit me because I thought, that's one of the reasons why I wrote this book. But he said, we have all these people, and they're on the front stage, and they're great at their job. But he said, the best singer in America is at home in their living room singing right now, and nobody knows they're there. And that's it. It's right there. There are people that are on the front lines right now. They're going to transform this world and everything we understand today. And if they don't make it, if they quit and they walk away and they go do something else, we suffer. And my kids will suffer because they won't have that leadership. And I wanted to give them a lifeboat to say, hold on, don't quit. Keep going. We need you. There's a reason you need to keep going. That's what I want. And I don't care if that's 10 people, if it's 100 people. If the right people grab it and it holds them on long enough to create another voice in the world that gets us to where we want to go, gold star, no matter what it costs.
So you want to radiate this. You want to radiate this out.
Yeah.
And hopefully they become the mentor to somebody else as time moves on. And, you know, when I looked at the book, though, you know, well, first of all, it's backed by real experience. So it's not academic, right?
Sure.
Which I have no tolerance for academics. Okay, I just don't. If the author does not have real hard experience in have been beat up a little bit, okay, then I put less faith in what they write because they're writing for more of an academic type of thing, especially when their books are all peer reviewed by other PhDs that don't have experience.
Yeah, right?
And I'm not trying to knock PhDs. Don't get me wrong, but
but
I guess when you look at your book, I go back to my sensei Nakao told me once. He's and what I learned at Toyota in 1990 when I first went there many times in Japan. You know, I asked him how the heck could you guys allow your competition into your factories?
Yeah,
and they said what they need to know, they cannot see.
Yes.
And your book is that.
It's that piece.
Your book is the invisible, okay? I think it is. I mean, because this is the stuff that everybody kind of shrugs off. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, Jason, great. Now tell me how to calculate a tack time. Yeah. Tell me how to do a CPK. I want to know the technical stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? You know? But they're not looking at this and paying enough attention to it. So it's very easy for those to look at it and say, yeah, it's basic kindergarten stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah? Well, go do it.
Go do it. It's really hard. That's it.
Go do it.
It's really hard. Yep.
Okay? And you know, and self-analyze yourself to say, where am I weak in terms of the things that you're talking about, you know, and where can I just do a little bit better in this respect or that respect, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's academic, you know. I think maybe those that who are saying that are probably threatened by it.
You know, that's an interesting perspective. I hadn't thought about that, but that's an interesting, I guess it's hard for me to imagine that would be a threatening idea, but there is, that's certainly a possibility for sure.
I had a leader one time, president brought me in, and said, Mark, I just had a lunch and learn with some of your people.
Yeah.
I'll go, yeah. And I close the door, please. I have to talk to you. Do you realize, they love working for you.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, okay, yeah, so what's the problem?
That's a good thing.
You can't have that kind of relationship with them. It's a union, they're union people.
Yeah.
Very elitist guy, okay?
Yeah.
I go, what do you mean the union people? They're people.
They're people.
You know. And I said, you know, we have a lot of fun at work.
Yeah.
We have pet names for each other. We kid around with each other. That's my nature anyways, you know?
Yeah.
And the ladies all thought I was there because I was in my 30s, you know, I was young.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, the ladies all thought I was kind of like, they took me in as like their son, you know, and they'd bring me cookies on Friday and stuff like that. And, you know, we had a lot of fun, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, I asked for their ideas, and we, you know, turned their overtime into Kaizen. Because I did guarantee, I said, look, I'm not going to screw up your overtime. That's something a lot of accountants and leaders don't get.
It's very touchy.
I said, guys, keep this in this room.
Yeah.
I'm not going to screw up your overtime.
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, oh, we're working 20% overtime. We got to cut the overtime down. I said, but what I want you to do on the 20% overtime, let's work on stuff that's fun.
Aim it in the right direction. Yeah.
Put the product behind schedule so you work on Saturday. You want to come in on Saturday? We'll work on Kaizen. We'll do some stuff.
See, but that's
let's do
brilliant.
Some productive stuff. And I earned their trust. I said, I will protect your overtime. Because they, you know, they looked at that as almost like a salary, right?
Yeah.
A certain level of income, right? You know how that works.
I do. Yes.
Accountants and elite leaders don't understand that. Okay?
No.
And I said, I'm not going to screw up your overtime.
Yeah.
Okay. And we got more out of it. And then I said to this leader who said, you can't have that kind of relationship. I said, by the way, we broke all records for this company.
Yeah.
In quality and delivery and all this other stuff. Cost. I said, we broke all the records. Never did anybody have this amount of success. So what really is the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Mark, you just can't have that kind of relationship because of the union. I said, so what do you want me to do? Go piss them off? I could do that. Just like
we'll
you're pissing
backwards.
Me off right now. I said,
yeah.
Them. Yeah. I said, I'll go out and piss them off. Okay. And, no, wait, that's not what I mean. What do you mean?
Yeah. What do you mean? I don't understand.
So I said, look, my father was a tool and die guy for 44 years, a union guy. Okay. Blue collar. He was brilliant, by the way.
Yeah.
And, he fought in the Battle of Iwo Jima, in World War II.
Wow.
And when I see those people, I see my father.
That's right.
Okay. And I have more respect for them. And I was able to say this at the time. Because
It's hard to say, isn't it? I know. It's hard.
I had our CEO's backing, which ultimately he hired me to run to start DBS, right? I said, I have more respect for them than I do for you today.
Yeah.
Maybe not yesterday, but today after this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fair.
So I said to him,
and you were that voice on that day. You were that voice that said, I don't respect this idea. I don't accept this as the normal. It's tough. It's tough.
You know, these people are working hard. They're trying to raise families. Yeah. They're trying to pay the bills and, you know, and working in the factory is tough. You know,
it is tough. Mean,
it's a hard job.
Yes. Yep.
And, but I do appreciate, Jason, this is great. And I really do, you know, wish you the best. Oh, by the way, I want to show your book. I should have done this earlier, which I didn't do. Shame on me. But I want to show. Hold on for 1 minute. Hopefully that shows up on the screen.
Yes.
There's a good looking Jason Neal there. Excellent line. So you can get this on Amazon. You can get it in hardcover, paperback, and you have a Kindle version.
Yes, sir.
Right? And Amazon.com, it's in there. Read it and leave a review too, because this is the stuff, you know, this is the stuff that you're not going to get in a lot of places. There's so many, you know, lean books that are out there today. I talk about all kinds of things, right? And I would probably say, in my estimation, 5 to 10% of them are worth reading, right? But this one is special because it talks about the invisible, you know, what they need to know they cannot see. This is what you're talking about, and this is what gets played up in a lot of talk but not in a lot of action. So it's what I like about it again is that you actually have demonstrated experience with this, okay, and you have the scars on your back and you know. Which is, you know, interesting. And why did you choose on the cover? I'm looking at the cover here, and I'll pull it back up again. You got this broken pathway. Let me pull it up again for the people if they're watching on YouTube. or on Rumble. You know, for 1 minute, Jason.
Yeah.
Pull this up. But why that picture? I was curious on that one.
That's it comes to the question that you asked in the very beginning of this call, and I probably passed over it too lightly when you said, do you think that things happen by accident or is there a larger plan? My whole life has been literally the example of what you said. It's all these broken pieces. And if you had looked at my life, even as a person, and the struggles that I had, it's just getting my feet on the ground and doing anything. It's all these broken pieces. And there were larger hands at work that were putting things together in my life at just the right time and just the right places, even meeting you and connecting you, like, wow. You know what I'm saying? I look back and I'm like, how did that even happen? But it did. And I'm so thankful for it. And it's all these pieces. This is how I visualize my life, my career. There's so many tables I sit at and I'm like, I shouldn't even be there. Like that should be somebody else. I should not even be at that table. But these pieces have come together. And it's my goal and my heart. I would like to help others find a way to bring those pieces together and to make, you know, achieve their goals and their dreams and things that they want to do. And because I didn't get it, I didn't pay for it, right? People invested in me and I don't always know why. And I want to be able to give that back to people and say, hey, like, here's an opportunity for me to share something that I picked up. Maybe you won't have to live all of it. Maybe you can have different failures and issues and not hurt so bad. I don't know.
I love the image though, because it shows this broken walkway coming into a beautiful, nice,
even. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the front part of that walkway, I tried to put a walkway in one time and that's what it looked like.
I've been there. Not going to lie.
And it was an accident, period.
It always looks good up here, doesn't it? I know.
I found out the best tool I had was the pen to write a check.
Yeah, there you go.
Now it's credit card, right? But
any last
thoughts, any last comments? This has been great.
I just want to say thanks for having me on here today. I will tell you, and I do want to take the time, Flatlined. I really enjoyed that book. A lot of the comments that you heard on here today and the stories that you shared, Mark, that's been a great inspiration to me. I read that. I actually keep it here. Mine's tattered. That's why I don't want to show it, because it's tattered. But it's because I look at it all the time. There's a lot of reference in there. And thanks. And if you're hearing this today and there's somebody maybe that you could invest in their life and you haven't, take the time, take little steps. What can I do tomorrow to make tomorrow better than today?
Yeah, and don't expect anything in return. I mean, that's just do it because it's the right thing to do. You know,
well
and,
said.
By the way, I just got to say that I would like to have a royalty, though, of all the sleep medication that you're saving because you're reading your book at night.
Okay? Yes. and that's humility right there. I appreciate you, man.
Hey, look, when a client would ask me, why should we hire you? I tell them, because I made more mistakes than you have.
There you go.
And you will make the same mistakes. I'm trying to prevent you from doing that, you know. But
it's well said.
But Jason, this has been great. I wish you the best. And we'll obviously continue to stay in touch. This book, I just think it's an easy read, by the way, because it's well written. It's practical. It doesn't have a lot of, you know, nuances, and it hits you right in the gut. It just, like, Jason comes out and just basically says what it is, and there's no real reason for guessing here, because you're very straightforward in your style, and I think it's something that everybody should take a look at. So
thank you, Mark.
Okay, Jason Neal again. Mark@lean911.com if you have any comments about this episode or questions about the book or anything else. Email me at mark@lean911.com and we will talk to you later. Jason, I really appreciate the time. Thanks.
Same. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.